This summer, our very own Cillian Murphy is playing, I'd say it's the role of a lifetime, a man who changed the world forever. Have a listen to some of what is in store when Oppenheimer hits our screens in July.
We've got one hope. All America's industrial might and scientific innovation connected here.
Build a town, build it fast. If we don't let scientists bring their families, we'll never get the best.
Why would we go to the middle of nowhere for who knows how long?
Why? Why? How about because this is the most important thing to ever happen in the history of the world?
Most dangerous thing to ever happen. Dr. Niamh Shaw is sitting in front of me. Usually we're talking about space and all that kind of stuff, aren't
we?
Shifting,
we're shifting to the left.
We're shifting, but you're very excited about this movie.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Why?
Well, it's a really interesting time in our history. You know, it's where scientists sort of stepped in and helped the war effort, but kind of, you know, landed on something that then became something that we tried to control, and we sort of set this thing free, which a lot of scientists then regretted, you know.
Yeah.
So that, and Oppenheimer was right in the middle of all of that.
Let's talk about Oppenheimer for who is Robert Oppenheimer?
So he was this guy, first generation American, from a wealthy family. They lived in Manhattan, and he basically was the director of this Los Alamos Center, which managed what was known as the Manhattan Project, which was the secret covert operation to develop an atomic bomb, which ultimately ended the Second World War. I don't know how you say it, but you know, it dropped two bombs, one on Hiroshima, one on Nagasaki in 1945, and just ended the war. And there's very mixed feelings about that. But he was really instrumental in making that happen. And he was a really interesting character as well. He was educated in a college called Ethical Cultural School or something like that. And basically, so he had a very strong set of values and seemed to be kind of conflicted by the pursuit of his curiosity with his ethics. So he developed the atomic bomb and only really wanted, the military to use it just the once. And he was very excited when he saw it used the once and then realised the impact of his work. And then when the Americans went ahead and then dropped the second one in Nagasaki, he was absolutely disgusted and appalled and stepped away. And, you know, the military realised they were onto a winner, and then they wanted to develop the hydrogen bomb, and he just completely refused to be involved in that. And then they tried to frame him as a communist. He had a security revoked, his security clearance revoked, and he was only vindicated in 2022. So, and he was a madman. I mean, he was very, with people who have that kind of level of focus and an intellect, they tend not to be the most socially sort of stable. So people just didn't know what to make of him. He was amazing in one-to-one, but in public he was strange. Some people thought he was pretentious. Other people thought he was a genius. He had a very colourful love life, which I'm sure they will focus on in the movie. So a very interesting
perfect movie.
There's tons there. There's absolutely tons there.
Okay, so what do we know? In the clip it says, oh, build me a town, build it now. Yeah. What's that referring to?
So in order to do this, they were trying to, it was sort of a race to develop the atomic bomb before the Germans did, because the Germans are, you know, they're fantastic scientists. And around about 1939, an Austrian and Hungarian scientist living in America realised that it was only a matter of time before the Germans were going to develop the atomic bomb. So they approached Albert Einstein, who then approached the President Roosevelt at the time and said, you need to do something. And so everybody got into action, and the military took over, and they set up this research facility in Los Alamos in New Mexico, which was under complete secrecy. It was called the Manhattan Project, and nobody knew about it until after those two bombs were launched. But they gathered together scientists and families of scientists, and they just built this town overnight. And people have amazing stories. Like, there's all this testimony of people. One guy was saying he was a graduate from college, and this guy, this man in a black suit, came up to him and said, "Do you want to work on a really interesting project?" And he said, "Yeah." And that's all he was told. And he was whisked away, and he ended up in Los Alamos. Other wives talk about that this man would call to the door in a black suit, would take the husband away into an office or into a room, and the next thing, then they were told to just pack their suitcases. The husbands were never, and there was a few women scientists, they were never allowed to talk about what they did to their families.
Hang on, it says there's over 100,000 people living there.
I don't know if it was that many. I think there was probably about 10,000 or so living there, okay. But there was about 100,000 to 150,000 working on it.
Working on it, okay.
So it was like a military base, but there were scientists on site. So it was a very tense place where nobody knew what was going on. It was all kind of cloaked in secrecy.
And they kept it secret,
yeah. So the Manhattan Project was what they feel kind of ended the war, you know. And then after the war, then a lot of it disbanded, but it still exists to this day. And you know, it's still a research center for all things nuclear bombs and stuff in America. And there's still about 6,000 people there. But yeah, it was crazy. They said like they had a post office, they had a store, they had a hospital, they had schools, and people were just uprooted and made live there. And seemingly it was, you know, a lot of families were not happy, you know, because the desert is a hard place to be, and New Mexico is a very dry, arid place, you know.
How is Oppenheimer regarded in scientific circles these days?
I think he's...
A mixed bag, is it?
Well, he did a lot. Afterwards, you know, he got on the advisory committee for the Atomic Energy Committee because he really felt that we needed to marshal the whole thing about nuclear war, because he could see the potential of this if it got into the wrong hands. And then also in 1960, working with the big scientists of the time, like Einstein, they established the World Academy of Art and Science because he really believed that everybody should know everything. And that we have to have science in society so that we make the right decision. You know what, Jen? It's really weird because it's kind of the same thing that people are saying now about artificial intelligence or AI, that you discover this really powerful thing, but be careful. You have to manage it really, really well.
But I think it seems it's intangible, or it's a very difficult thing to do, to not let your curiosity of the magnitude of what you've created, of what you've done, get in the way of the decent human, on a human level, thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's the struggle for a lot of people involved in research who kind of become obsessed with something because they want it to happen so much. But you always have to think about, well, how people have to be able to have a say in what they want to happen with this technology going forward, you know. So it's the same argument repeated over and over again. But this is still an argument, you know, because now we have the war going on. Everybody's afraid about the nuclear arms and everything. So the Oppenheimer, I think, because of his formative education, really understood the implications of what he'd done. And I think he had a lot of regrets. So on one side, he's really curious and he wants to see what people can do. And then the other side, he also realizes that he unleashed a kind of a monster. So it must have been very hard to be him. And I think he wasn't alone. I think there was a lot of scientists at the time that would have also kind of gone, what have we done? You know, what have we unleashed to the world?
200,000 Japanese people died because of this findings. He suffered from mental health issues throughout his life. Do we know whether those struggles were after the bombs were dropped in Japan or before?
Always. He was always... an introvert, big thinker. He'd forget to eat when he was kind of on his, you know, on the flow, basically.
Yeah.
You know, the way we all get in the flow, whether we're hoovering or listening to music, you know, we all know what that, you know what I mean? It's like when you're in the moment, or whether it's sewing or, I don't know, watching Succession, I don't know. But for him, like when he was in the moment, he would forget to eat and he would just like fixate. So he was a big smoker. But yeah, he always had, he always seemed to have mental health issues. Like in college, he did some crazy things. Like he went to strangle a friend of his because he was jealous because this guy was started going out with a girl that he liked. He tried to poison his supervisor during his PhD, and for those of you who've done a PhD, I can kind of understand that a little bit. And he was nearly kicked out of college. So there was always a little bit of, but that's always the way. I think anybody who's exceptional, they don't ever fit the norm. We always think, why can't you just be normal? But the whole point is, they're not normal, which is why they always do things that we cannot possibly achieve. So I think
normal people aren't dangerous, though.
No, that's right. They're like on the edge, you know. So I think he always was somebody that had kind of mental health issues.
I can't wait to see it now. You sold it to me. Brilliant. Me Dr. Niamh Shaw, thank you so much for coming in to tell us just about a story we'll all be watching over the summer. Jen Zamparelli on RTE 2FM.